No person of conscience could have participated knowingly in mass murder. To believe otherwise is to learn nothing about the nature of conscience. And, uninteresting though it may be to say so, no banality of a man could have done so hugely evil a job so well. To believe otherwise is to learn nothing about the nature of evil. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 218, The Memories of Mickey Goldman. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Let us begin again today with Mickey Goldman, the Holocaust survivor and police officer who played a central role in the Eichmann trial. Goldman, in an interview with Yad Vashem, describes Bureau 6, of which he was a part, which was charged with the assembling of evidence. Goldman said, quote, almost 70% of the Bureau 6 team members were Holocaust survivors. Work within Bureau 6 was divided along geographical lines. We were 12 to 13 investigation officers. Each of us was assigned one area within the territories which had been under Nazi occupation, and we were in charge of collecting the material, locating witnesses, and preparing them for their testimony in court. We all had to speak German, and I had spoken fluent German at home. For the entire week, we stayed at a motel in Haifa that was rented by the police. Due to the secrecy of the investigation, we could not reveal our whereabouts even to our families because of the total secrecy. The fear was, and not without basis, that there would be an attempt to capture him and rescue him. The secrecy made us uneasy. End quote. In the preliminary interrogation of Eichmann before the trial, an interrogation in which Goldman participated, Eichmann adopted the response that he would put forward in the trial itself. Goldman, describing Eichmann, remembered that, quote, during his interrogation, he would usually lie from A to Z, clear lies and lots of, I don't recall. For example, we wanted details about his visit to the Yanovska concentration camp in Lvov, but he couldn't remember. He could remember that he had previously been to the Lvov train station and precisely what kind of sausages he ate in a restaurant there. In other words, whatever he wanted to remember, he remembered perfectly. And what he didn't want to remember, he didn't. He accepted no responsibility for himself or the documents signed by him. He claimed he had signed them in the name of his superior, Heinrich Mueller, the Gestapo chief. End quote. But of course, Mickey Goldman understood whom he was facing in interrogation, saying, quote, when he opened his mouth, I had the feeling I was seeing the gates of the crematorium. This was my immediate first feeling. End quote. Thus, in a sense, this preliminary interrogation paralleled what would occur in the trial. Eichmann would deny responsibility, but in the end, to look at Eichmann was to see the embodiment of evil itself. Throughout his own statements in court, Adolf Eichmann sought to present himself as one who mindlessly followed orders. Asked about the trains to the camps, he said, quote, I had to carry out the transports in accordance with my orders, end quote. But of course, there were any number of documents, along with so much other evidence, that highlighted how Eichmann was anything other than a mindless drone, that Eichmann constantly and proactively sought to arrange the murder of Jews, and that Eichmann sought to deport as many Jews to their deaths as possible. The historian Deborah Lipstadt describes Eichmann's response to document after document in court that highlighted the leadership role he had played. Quote, the more Eichmann piled one excuse on top of another, it was a mistake, this is a forgery, or this is the work of a sloppy bureaucrat, the more he sounded like a drowning man grasping at straws, and the more it must have been clear to the judges that this man would say anything if he thought it would clear him. End quote. What Eichmann said in his original pre-trial interrogation, he said in court. And of course, the way in which he sought to defend himself in court became the focus of a book by Hannah Arendt, Eichmann in Jerusalem, based on Arendt's dispatches from The New Yorker. One of the horrible aspects of Arendt's writing about the trial was the way in which Arendt disgustingly referred at one point to the, quote, show trial David Ben-Gurion, Prime Minister of Israel, had in mind when he decided to have Eichmann kidnapped in Argentina and brought to the District Court of Jerusalem, end quote. With Arendt further adding that, quote, Gideon Hausner, the Attorney General, who representing the government, does his best, his very best, to obey his master, end quote. All this that Arendt wrote, as has been noted by others, is preposterous, as Hausner was actually a remarkably independent-minded prosecutor. And her description of the Eichmann trial as a show trial is all the more horrible in insinuation because, as Ruth Weiss has pointed out, Arendt wrote this after the actual show trials of Stalin, utilizing language that preposterously and outrageously compared Israel's trial of Adolf Eichmann to the trials held in the Soviet Union. Most famous or infamous is the way that Arendt referred to Eichmann as an embodiment of what she called the banality of evil, a phrase she utilized in order to advance her belief that totalitarian societies made individuals cogs in a machine in the perpetuation of evil, and an expression of her view that Eichmann was a reflection of the vindication of her thesis. Arendt's book received many responses, but the most eloquent of all came from a young writer named Norman Ponhoretz, who penned in Commentary Magazine a review of Arendt's book that was a response to what she had written, a review that was all the more impressive, not only because of its eloquence, but also because of the way that Arendt was at that point admired in his circle. In an incredible essay that stands the test of time and deserves to be read today as much as it did then, Norman Ponhoretz responded to Arendt by writing that, quote, "No person of conscience could have participated knowingly in mass murder. To believe otherwise is to learn nothing about the nature of conscience. And, uninteresting though it may be to say so, no banality of a man could have done so hugely evil a job so well. To believe otherwise is to learn nothing about the nature of evil." End quote. It is of course true that Eichmann himself was not the man that turned on the gas chambers or patrolled the concentration camps, but that does not make Eichmann less evil. On the contrary, I once led a group to the villa where the Wannsee Conference took place, the conference prepared by Eichmann, the conference where what the Nazis called the final solution was proposed. And before entering the villa, I quoted to the group something that C.S. Lewis once wrote, a passage from Lewis that profoundly parallels Norman Ponhoretz's point. C.S. Lewis wrote, quote, "The greatest evil is not now done in those sordid dens of crime that Dickens loved to paint. It is not even done in concentration camps and labor camps. In those we see its final result, but it is conceived and ordered, moved, seconded, carried, and minuted in clean, carpeted, warmed, and well-lighted offices by quiet men with white collars and cut fingernails and smooth-shaven cheeks who do not need to raise their voice," end quote. This is the evil of Eichmann, and it was Eichmann, an embodiment of this evil, that was justly tried in Jerusalem. He reflected an evil that was not banal at all. And in the end, what emerged in the Eichmann trial was not just the trial of a man guilty of participating in mass murder. It was also, as we have discussed, a trial in which Israelis came to learn about the fellow Jews in their midst, fellow Jews that had suffered so, fellow Jews whose lives built in the Jewish state after the Holocaust, and whose contribution to the Jewish state was a testament to their fortitude and endurance. As Lipstadt further pointed out, it is not, as is often said, that Israel did not speak about the Holocaust before the Eichmann trial. After all, the question of receiving funds from Germany in the 50s was a great political controversy. Rather, what changed with the trial is how the survivors were seen. One of these survivors, of course, was Mickey Goldman. I close then today with Mickey Goldman's words. Mickey Goldman, who not only played so profound a role in the prosecution of Eichmann, but who was also tasked after the sentencing of Eichmann with overseeing the hanging of Adolf Eichmann and with overseeing the cremation of Eichmann's body in a makeshift crematorium that was created for the purpose. Goldman was also tasked with overseeing the scattering of the ashes of Eichmann's body in the Mediterranean in order to prevent the body from being used by Nazi sympathizers in any way. All this was described by Goldman in an interview in the documentary The Trial of Adolf Eichmann, and I give you my translation from Mickey Goldman's Hebrew. Goldman said, quote, "It was the 30th of May, 1962. I reached the prison in Ramla, where he was. There was the hanging chamber, a couple minutes before midnight. We stood facing Eichmann, who was brought inside. He stood under the gallows," end quote. Goldman went on to describe how right before his hanging, Eichmann said, "Long live Germany, long live Austria, long live Argentina." Mickey Goldman then added, quote, "Others brought the body to a crematorium that was created in a specified way in the courtyard of the prison. When they opened the door of the crematorium and the men working in the prison were working to remove the ashes, and I looked how much ash was left from one person. I remember an episode that I cannot forget to this day when I was in Birkenau and they brought us to a mountain of ash. We already knew that this was human ash. Not far from this mountain was the crematorium with its chimney, and we saw the flame coming out of the chimney." And then Goldman reflected, "Only then did I realize how many hundreds of thousands were in that mountain," end quote. At that point in the film, Goldman began to cry. Then, composing himself, he added, quote, "We traveled to the port at Yafo. There was a small police ship. We traveled 6 miles out of the Israeli territorial waters. The commander of the prison, Nir, and I opened the urn, and we poured the ash into the waves of the sea. After the scattering, we began to return. Slowly, slowly, the sun rose. We drew near to the port. I saw how people were already going to work, fishermen returning with what had been caught the night before. I saw," and then again Goldman pauses, composes himself, and adds, that life goes on and the nightmare of the night had ended, end quote. Thus did Mickey Goldman end the nightmare of that experience with dawn over the Jewish state, and his memories deserve to be enshrined in our minds and hearts. This is Mayor Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.